present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Betterware sale catalogue read by Rory Morrison.
Rechargeable lighting strip. Use it as a bright portable light, or plug it into the mains to provide emergency lighting in a power cut.
Our thanks to Dave Tyndall from Watlington in Oxfordshire for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Hugo Rifkin and Sue Perkins. And opposite them on my left, Jeremy Hardy and Mark Steele. Hugo, who has proposed major surgery for the health service?
This would be Andrew Lansley, the Health Secretary, and his friend David Cameron. Are there the Tories' NHS proposals, massive reforms to the NHS. They've decided that GPs are brilliant, which is true, but they've decided the problem with the NHS is all the administrators. So what they're going to do is get rid of all the administrators, destroy primary care trusts, and give all their responsibilities to GPs. But then the GPs are going to think, hold on, I'm a GP, I don't know how to administrate. So they're going to have to re-employ all the administrators, which means all the same people are going to get re-employed in a different way. They've basically created proposals whereby they're going to spend millions of pounds and endure 10 years of chaos to end up almost exactly back where they started. It's brilliant.
So in theory, though, any company could decide to move into healthcare.
Well, there's also the competition aspect.
Like an egg and spoon race?
Pretty much. Well, ish. Only if you're very unlucky. Because at the moment, you need your appendix out and your GP sends you to the hospital, whereas in the future, you'll need your appendix out and the GP will go to the hospital and go, can you do this appendix? And they'll go, it'll cost £1,000 to the taxpayer. And then he'll go to the guy down the road and he'll say, I'll do it for a fiver with my chisel. and they'll say, done.
You could have the Royal Mail Ambulance Service, which would take you 4 days to get to the hospital. And if you're ill on a Sunday, you'll never get there.
You get a card come through, your knee operation was due today.
We'll do it for you at another time. Or it'll be like the train operators. It'll be all different companies, will take over different bits. You'll have a heart attack. Paramedics will wheel you as far as A&E, and then they'll say, well, now, as you see, this ticket doesn't actually get you through to the next ward, you see, because you've only got a super saver A&E ticket.
They don't have A&E in private hospitals because it's not remunerative at all.
No, there's no A&E.
There's no A&E. You turn up with having had a heart attack.
Anyone
say,
can turn
well,
up.
We can do you some breasts, but that's about it, really. Chest pains will give you breasts, you know.
The hospitals aren't all going to be private. It's just the private hospitals are going to be able to compete with the non-private hospitals.
There'll be a Tesco hospital in 5 years.
Oh, no! Can you
there'll
imagine
be a five organs or less aisle where...
They want patients to be more involved in the decision-making. Think, look, the reason we go to doctors is that we don't know what's wrong with us. We don't go in there and say, hello, doctor, could you distract me while I remove my gallstones? you know, and you think, the doctor knows about medicine, not about managing. Let the doctor do the medicine. It's like receptionists. They say, could I ask you what it's about? No, not unless you are a general practitioner. No, I will discuss it with the doctor. It's none of your business. Answer the bloody phone and run messages. What's wrong with me?
You find that works? The idea of with patients more choice, you want yourself sorted. If you're lying in the road, you don't want three different ambulances turning up with a load of paramedics giving you brochures and that and thinking, oh, I don't know, St. Thomas's has got much shinier bedpans.
As you get older, you don't want choice. It's confusing. I don't like eating in restaurants anymore because you look at the menu and think, oh, there's too many things, I don't know. Whatever I have will be wrong and I wish I'd had what somebody else had. Why can't they have restaurants where they just give you your tea on your lap,
Jeremy,
in front of the telly?
Jeremy, when a waiter says to you, what would you like, sir? Do you say, oh, I don't know. It's not your job to ask me what I want to do. Why don't you just answer the bloody phone and I'll discuss it with the chef, thank you.
Just give you something to eat and say, here's your tea now, just eat that and don't moan.
You're the only person I know who's looking forward to being taken into a home.
Health Secretary Andrew Lansley has unveiled the Health and Social Care Bill, which proposes radical free market reforms to the NHS. Many analysts have compared the process of opening up of the NHS to private firms to the process the railways underwent after privatisation. So expect many operations to be cancelled, but the sandwiches to improve. David Cameron did say, he said he had 12 months to save the NHS. Do you not think that sounds like the plot of the worst film ever? 2 points to Hugo. Sue, why will there be no end of the peer show?
This is to do with the Lords filibustering. Basically, the Lords are stalling, and they're allowed to. In America, you can stall by any means necessary. So you can literally stand up and you can read a phone directory. However, in this country, you have to observe very strict rules of stalling. You can speak for as long as you like, as long as you don't repeat, hesitate, or deviate. But I think it's fantastic, because basically it's to do with they want to push through the alternative voting motion, which Ed Miliband is a huge fan of course, because he was everyone's second favourite choice. But anyway, they are stalling, and it's brilliant, because it's like a sleepover and they're all going, oh, it's going to be great fun. We've got camp beds, and we're going to play lots of games, somebody's bought a guitar, we'll have this little sing-along, and later on we'll have ghost stories, it'll be so fun. And there'll be midnight snacks, and Nurse will come along, and then we'll pinch Baroness Wassey's arse, and she'll go incredibly sad and sorry. I just think it's great. I think it's puerile, and yet underneath it all there's a very serious intention to split a bill that is basically a stalking horse for more sinister legislation.
It's the first time that many of those peers had been awake for a whole afternoon.
Mm. Well, see, they had a break of 5 minutes in the middle of the night, and the reason why they had this 5 minute break was because it meant that they could all then claim expenses of having been there for 2 days rather than just one long one. Great.
Makes
people.
You proud, doesn't it?
Makes you proud. Yeah.
But apparently, Sebastian Coe came in and did a lecture. I mean, that's narcolepsy walking, isn't it?
A lot of that parliamentary language is sort of unpleasant. I don't like the idea of an early day motion.
Well, certainly not after an all-night sitting.
No.
There's also a motion wrapped up in this, which is boundary alteration. So, for instance, Isle of Wight, according to the new Condem movement, is going to be half in Hampshire and half in Ireland.
I think we could do the same sort of shake-up on this programme, do you think?
What, we could merge into quote-unquote?
Well, I was thinking Jeremy could be part of Woman's Hour and we could stop for you to do Thought of the Day. That would be quite good.
I like Thought for the Day.
Do you?
Yeah, I love it. It's fun listening to all these people just crowbar Jesus into whatever the story is that day. There always is something. Last night I was watching Gordon Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares, and once again some poor hapless restaurateur found himself at the wrong end of Mr. Ramsay's ribald invective, and that put me in mind. Isn't that a little bit like Jesus? But Jesus too went out for supper one night. Well, they're brilliant. Whatever's happened in the news. Barack Obama has had someone over from China. Isn't that a little bit like Jesus?
They still have Anne Atkins on. But she likes to be a bit edgy. She says things like, Christians aren't against sex. I mean, my husband and I have a very...
I had to share a car with her coming all the way back from Warrington.
Did she try and cop a feel?
No, I was in the front seat, but it was... she was in the back seat.
Are you suggesting if you'd been in the back seat?
A little bit of Christian action, hey?
Christian aid, I think they call it.
We've been on Question Time, and on she started wanting to debate this, and I thought, oh, please. And the driver drove at about 45 miles an hour all the way down the M6. And I thought, this is just like it is some terrible sitcom thing. It's going on for hours
and
hours.
But you know what? She'd said to the driver, she slipped him a five and gone, take it slow, will you? I've got steel in the car tonight.
Oh, I remember thinking, I really hope we crash, because at least at least in that half a second as we're dying, one of us will know whether we were right or not.
Government opponents are filibustering in the House of Lords to prevent the Parliamentary Voting and Constituencies Bill passing the committee stage and becoming law. On Thursday, the House of Lords rose at 3 a.m. Well, it's only to be expected at their age. The current marathon session is the longest continuous time the Lords have spent in the chamber since the infamous Stannis stairlift breakdown of 1991. 2 points to Sue. Jeremy, which pretty straight kind of guy appeared in public without notes this week?
Well, again, we're slightly banjaxed because the show is recorded before the appearance of Tony Blair at the Chilcot Inquiry. He was on it last year and they thought he was so good, he's got a recall. By the time this show goes out, he will have appeared and we don't know what he will say. But the Inquiry wants to publish extracts from his messages to George Bush, but Sir Gus O'Donnell, who is head of light entertainment at the Home Office or something, He won't let them. So we are not allowed to read what Tony Blair said to George Bush, which I imagine is predominantly answers, such as, yes, boss, whatever you say, and, oh, George, I can see your duodenum from up here.
By the way, he doesn't like to refer to this as his second appearance at the inquiry. He likes to see it more as a second coming.
That's fair enough.
They've released the letters, though, that Prescott wrote to Bush. We can actually read those, which basically go, you know when you say you like, Tony, do you mean like, as in, you know, like, or just like? Just check it.
The idea is supposed to be they're being held back because they contain terrible secrets, but it is just probably like Blair going, we can't do this without a mandate, and Bush going, sort of, lol, mandate, sounds a bit gay. The thing is, most of these notes anyway have actually been published, or at least details of them have been published in Bush's memoirs and in Blair's memoirs.
I know,
and
but who
Campbell's
wants to read those?
Memoirs. And, well, that's the thing, obviously not the Chilcot Inquiry. You think it'd be a good place to start?
Gus O'Donnell is apparently Britain's top civil servant, and how do they know? I mean, is there like an X factor for civil servants? Is there like...
When they come on, 75,000 documents! 3 white papers! I think you're very brave, love. You've come up here and you've formulated policy, and I think you've been on a journey, and I think you're marvellous.
Yes, former Prime Minister Tony Blair today, Friday, made his second appearance at the Chilcot Inquiry into the Iraq invasion, where he had to defend the fact that Cabinet Secretary Gus O'Donnell prevented the publication of notes sent by Blair to George Bush. Or, if you're listening to the repeat, the world is still reeling from Tony Blair's appearance at the Chilcot Inquiry yesterday, where he broke down under questioning and made a tearful confession before being arrested for war crimes and hauled away to The Hague. And at the end of round one, the scores are exactly level. Everybody's got 4 points. We start round two with a travel brochure listing for an hotel in Egypt.
Luxuriate in the wonderful culinary delights of the Oceana restaurant, with its tasty cuisine and innovative dishes from all over the world, in particular, Belgium.
Now, thanks to Mike Richards for sending us that. Hugo, listen to this. Hugo, who wants to rewrite history for kids?
Michael Gove, the education secretary. He thinks kids aren't learning stuff. He's worried that there aren't enough facts in education. Children today, they think that, you know, Churchill was the dog from the insurance advert. And so he wants kids at school to learn facts rather than to be subjected to theories of learning. He thinks that they should learn things by rote so they can talk in a manner that makes them sound a bit like Michael Gove.
It's this idea that the best way to learn is to sit in serried ranks with teachers barking out random disconnected bits of information which you then just sort of memorise. Because that's what education was like when I was growing up. And you just learn all these things like, well, King Henry VIII had 6 wives, and the way that you remember that is divorced, beheaded, flopsy, mopsy, cottontail, except in January alone when there are 23. And it's not true anyway. They keep saying, oh, children don't know the name of Winston Churchill. Well, they do if they're studying the history of Britain in the first half of the 20th century. If they're studying the Renaissance, Churchill doesn't pop up so much. not mention him. They don't say, and after the resignation of Neville Chamberlain, the government was taken over by... He comes up when he's relevant.
That little rhyme you refer to there... You know, that divorce beheaded died, divorce beheaded survived. I always think, like, historians of the future will have a much easier time, won't they? Coming up with a rhyme to remember the current royal family.
Divorce.
It'd just be divorce, 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 crashed.
I went to a very, very minor public school, a girls' school, and honestly, they just didn't bother with the education. They just were not interested. In our library, I went to school in, so I left it in 1976, we had an Encyclopedia Britannica from 1903, which listed the car as an experimental vehicle.
The obsession with dates, I always thought, is ridiculous, because that's the least interesting fact about most historical points, you know. But the first thing you learn, the first thing I learned at school when I was 7... Right, we're going to learn about British history. When was the Battle of Hastings? When? When you grow up, you think that's the least interesting part. But apart from anything else, I bet even in 1071 most people couldn't remember. I bet most people went, oh, it can't be 5 years ago already. No, it was 1067 when Ken got leprosy. He's right.
What about 100 years war, though? Of course, they didn't call it that when it started. They probably called it the It'll All Be Over by Christmas War. It's very hard to know what happened at the Battle of Hastings because the Normans thought the best way to document military history was through embroidery.
Being of the generation that didn't learn facts at school, I'm only going to figure out what you're all talking about when I Google it on my phone.
I'm going to send the Education Secretary after you. He looks like the child catcher. Education Secretary Michael Gove has launched a review of the national curriculum, which he wants to focus on traditional subjects like maths and mistrust of the French. One teacher denied that Britain has the worst levels of education in Western Europe, arguing, no way, America is, like, way worse. 2 points to Hugo. Sue, who has watered down their alcohol plans?
Pre-coalition, I think the Tories promised to curb binge drinking, much to my own personal sadness, by basically increasing the price of alcohol. And this week, one of the crime prevention ministers stood up and said, hello, my name is James, and I'm a U-turnaholic, and basically said, oh, we're not going to do that anymore. And the end of this report was a simple line that said, there are no plans to introduce the lowering of alcohol prices in Scotland.
You can buy Tesco home brand lager for 23 pence.
23 pence?
It's incredibly good value because it's a terrific paint stripper as well. It's
You can get Costcutter wine-flavoured drink for 7.5p.
The guy in charge.
Special brew.
Hmm?
Have you ever drunk special
in
brew?
In a cinema watching Silence of the Lambs. And I got as far as Gladys or something like that. I'm going to cook up your organs in a vat of custard. And just slipped into unconsciousness and was then woken by a member of the St John's ambulance as the credits rolled. That's true.
I once tried...
Well, I had three cans.
Ooh. Right.
And the first one, you're thinking, oh, it's got a kind of nice little pokey top note. And the second one, you're thinking, I'm having a brain hemorrhage. And the third one, you are on the planet Zarg being spoken to by a mosquito with eyes the sizes of Saturn. And then the next thing I remember was a woman going, my name's Joanna, I'm a doctor, and this tube is going down your throat and out is coming all the alcohol. What a waste of time you are.
Does anybody know about vodka eyeballing?
Oh, yes. I know. I've read about it. What an evening. So you get a shot glass with some vodka in. It's like an Optrex dispenser, basically, but with just neat alcohol in it. And then you put it up to your eye, and if you're like me, you have to remember, you have to not be drunk enough, you have to take your spectacles off, otherwise you just...
Oh, what if you've got contacts?
Oh, contacts, forget it. They're going to be caramelised onto your iris.
Do you know the guy who did announce the whole thing about the alcohol price thing? He's the crime prevention minister, and his name is James Brokenshire, which I think is the rural version of the Broken Society. But I like his name a lot.
Makes him sound like a sort of renegade hobbit, doesn't it?
The government has been accused of watering down plans to tackle binge drinking after announcing a minimum price on alcohol, which will be duty plus VAT. Britain has a long-term problem with binge drinking. Apparently, only Australians drink more alcohol per head of the population, which is an incredible achievement, given that most of their bar staff are in this country. We have a saying in Denmark, you can't cure a hangover, but you can cure bacon. 2 points to Sue. Jeremy, whose sun care regime is a bit rickety?
There's this mythology that the sun is evil, and so people are not getting enough sunlight, and we're all major vitamin D deficient in this country. Because my mum had this idea about, oh, it's deceptive. You've got to be careful with us. Oh, you can still burn even when it's cloudy and you're indoors with your coat on at night. It's deceptive. The sun is quite dangerous if you fly into it at high speed. Right in the middle. Then it is quite a dangerous thing. In general, it supplies vitamin D and stops the world from dying. Whenever there's an eclipse, they'll say, oh, do be careful. Don't look at the sun. Don't look at... And it's rubbish. That 2000 eclipse, I stared straight into that, and I can still make out the broad outlines of shapes. I can. It's rubbish. That was brilliant, that eclipse, because I was over in County Tyrone. And it was great because on the news they were saying, if you're going to view the eclipse, only do so through a paving slab or with your head in a bucket of soil. But every man in Cull Island was standing like meerkats in the street, standing, staring straight into the sun. And the kids are saying, Daddy, we're not supposed to look straight at it. We've endured 800 years of colonial occupation. I think we can deal with a bit of sunlight. Thank you. But there is a degree of truth in... You've got to be careful of the sun. But these things get exaggerated. It's like one time a swan did break somebody's arm, but it was an accident. It was trying to peck a bit of duckweed off his elbow.
We get all this conflicting advice. Cover up in the sun, don't cover up in the sun, don't go around Tesco topless, all this sort of... When I was a girl, the doctors advised spending 15 minutes a day outdoors. Unfortunately, they didn't specify daytime, so...
It's a big problem in Denmark, is a lot of people get sunburnt.
They get depressed because of no sunshine, because it's dark all the time.
We do not get depressed. We are very happy people because we're not Finnish.
But there is this horrible thing now that people say, oh, children aren't exposed to enough risk, you see. We're raising a namby-pamby generation. These days, they put all this bouncy soft stuff in children's playgrounds. In my day, it used to be broken glass and landmines.
Does everybody in your head speak like a 1940s information film?
In my head they do, Sandra. You sound like a 1940s education film all the time. Hello, my name is Sandy Toksvig, Britain's most popular lesbian. Dale, this humorous...
Don't call me that. You'll upset Sue. Now... more than 40 children in Southampton and 20 in Newcastle have been diagnosed with rickets in the last 12 months, with doctors blaming the amount of time children spend indoors or covering up in the sun. Vitamin D can be obtained by eating eggs, drinking milk, or licking Judith Chalmers. 2 points to Jeremy. Mark, which drug-smuggling clan was a bit bird-brained?
It's a drug-smuggling pigeon.
Yes, somebody, rather than going by the conventional method of smuggling drugs by putting it up their bottom, instead got a pigeon to carry their drugs from them, by them, and they put it in the feathers. They put the pigeon in a rucksack.
All the mime in the world can't help the story.
That was my best pigeon wearing a rucksack mime. Right.
Where are they doing it? Where's the little pigeon with the massive bag of hashish as a rucksack? Where's the pigeon?
A Colombian pigeon?
He
was found to have flown into a Colombian police station carrying Class A drugs, and as a result, it is now doing 7 years, although it has come off the drugs and is currently lecturing other pigeons, saying, just say no.
You do realise this is exactly how news desks work.
There's somebody doing mime.
We should explain to the listening audience that Mark was helped through that entire question by Susan. Susan and Sandy fervently miming.
Sandy's actually mistaken because the pigeon didn't have the drugs in a rucksack. No. It had it strapped to its beak, which you think just aerodynamically is going to be a disaster, which in fact was the problem because it just beak
dived. It flew really fast.
It had something like 1.6 kilos of marijuana, and it's which is just the size of its own body weight.
But it couldn't get up over the fence to get into the prison.
These drug cartels, they actually not only use pigeons, they use parrots as well, which is criminal folly because parrots will talk, won't they? That's a really bad idea, isn't it?
They'll sing like a canary.
Customs officers just aren't going to be wise to this, either, because sometimes you're in an airport terminal and you see pigeons actually have got in, don't you? And they're just milling about and everyone thinks, oh, look at that, a pigeon's got in. They don't realise they're drug mules, do they?
Do you think the person who had the idea of strapping some cannabis to a pigeon had maybe smoked some first?
Yeah, but the good thing about using a pigeon, if you smoke marijuana, you've already got the rudimentary ingredients of a pigeon pie, haven't you? You're there.
Smoked marijuana, Sandy, to think that just after you've had a little toke, you think, pigeon pie.
The whole drug thing is such a mystery to me. I was reading the thing and it said, police said the pigeon was being used as a mule. And I thought, no wonder it couldn't finish its journey. Must have exhausted taking all those children up and down the beach first. I can't help feeling we're demonising the entire Colombian prison population. For all we know, it was the pigeon's personal stash.
I get high on my own supply.
cartoon in this, isn't there? The drug smuggling.
I happily voice the children's animation series, if anyone...
Colombian police have captured a carrier pigeon that was being used to smuggle marijuana and cocaine paste into a jail in Bucaramanga.
Ooh, it's Bucaramanga, the... Bucaramanga.
Hey, look at the drug smuggling pigeon, la Bucaranga.
If you've been affected by stereotypical Latin Americans...
I wait for you.
After being apprehended, the pigeon was hauled before a court. As the judge read out the verdict, it lowered its head, then raised it, then lowered it, and raised it. Anyway, before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Ms. Perkins.
This is from the Romsey Advertiser, from their small ads. Domestic appliances. One, Philips, excellent condition, £95, or near offer cash sale, hostage trolley.
Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by Tim Dalmau, and it's from the Sydney Morning Herald. A bizarre decision to ride an inflatable doll down a flood-swollen Yarra River blew up in a woman's face yesterday when she lost her latex playmate in a rough patch. The incident prompted a warning from police that blow-up sex toys are not recognised flotation devices.
Rifkin.
It's a bit like the story we've just been talking about, actually. It's from BBC News, and the headline is Cannabis Fed to Ducks by French Farmer for Deworming. Michael Ruhe said there was no better worming substance for ducks, and his flock was in excellent health. Mr. Ruhe did also admit to smoking some of the marijuana.
Mr. Steele.
This is from the Banbury Guardian, sent in by I know not who. There we are. Firefighters from Banbury and Deddington were called to reports of an overturned car on the B4031 on Sunday afternoon. To turn the vehicle back over, firefighters had to use a specialist wench.
Let's take a look at the final score. Hugo and Sue have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Mark with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from The Telegraph sent to us by Madeline Hargreaves from Burnley.
A cat named Tabby Sal has been summoned to do jury service in Boston, USA. His owners told the court a mistake had been made, but a jury commissioner ruled the cat must attend. A website for the US judicial system states that jurors are not expected to speak perfect English.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Hugo Rifkind, Sue Perkins, Jeremy Hardy and Mark Steele. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Rory Morrison. The chair's script was written by Lucy Clark, Rodney Crooks and Simon Littlefield, with additional material by John Hunter and Andy Walton. The producer was Victoria Lloyd.